Well, welcome to Truth Talks. Today, I have a really special guest. This is Grant Abraham. And Grant, you and I met through a mutual friend who introduced us. And then it was right around the time you were running for a political event in Alberta. So I thought we would start there. But I also want to spend quite a bit of time talking about your book, the book that has just come out, The Battle for the Soul of Canada, because I think this book is a tremendous, tremendous book that every Canadian should be reading. So tell me, let's talk about what you were doing in 2022. And then we're going to maybe do a little bit of background because you've traveled the world. And I'd like to hear some of that because I don't know that myself. Mm-hmm. And then we'll dig into your book. Does that sound doable?
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, go for it.
Okay. So, 2022, I think, 2022 really started for me in 2020 with the awareness that, the slow creep, the incremental creep that we were seeing in Canada, the changes that we were seeing that were ever so slow, massively accelerated. And so I went through 2020 and 2021 traveling quite a bit with some of the work that I was doing internationally, but watching the irrational application of the law and the compromise that we were seeing in our Constitution and our Charter of Rights and Freedoms kind of glibly applied all over the place in whatever fashion suited on the day. And really, it was in early January of 2022, it was really a more of a faith journey where I had a clear sense that I needed to engage in the contending for the leadership of the Conservative Party of Canada. And that really was a faith position for me because no one does that logically in their right mind. And so I undertook that with a clear sense of really almost not having a choice not to. But I did it as a non-politician, engaging that discussion, recognizing that the country was in deep trouble, and it wasn't just because of COVID measures. It was because of a deconstruction that was going on with regard to our values and the infrastructure upon which this country was built and upon which I guess the framework that we've all grown up and the framework that people have immigrated to Canada to enjoy. And so many Canadians now are deeply concerned about that, and there's much discussion about it across the nation and really across the world, actually, as I see communication with friends that I have in the UK, for example, watching what's going on with our reputation internationally, really in tatters. So that became a very interesting journey for me because in the natural, that would not have been something that would have had any success. And yet, within 6 weeks, there was the requirement for signatures and for money had come in. And that money was a significant amount in such a short time for a non-politician to raise. It was in excess of $300,000. And I thought, well, that's great. I'll be able to have these conversations. I went through the interview with the Conservative Party of Canada and was able to be approved. But then when the cutoff came, it was a letter saying that I hadn't raised the money. And that surprised me because I knew that I had the receipts and I was able to show, yes, I have raised it. And I put that to them. I said, maybe you made a mistake. Maybe there's been some problem in your calculation or you forgot something or whatever. No. We know what we're doing. If you think that, you're going to have to prove it to us. And to make a long kind of circuitous story short, rather than proving it to them, I took all my information to a forensic accountant who was able to isolate approximately $60,000 in their books that they hadn't calculated in the total that they gave me to justify me not being able to continue in that race. And that was troubling because it's either incompetence or deceit, right? It's either you lost it or you hid it, right? And
I was going to say, when you talk about how you kind of jumped into this race, so to say, and I had such a similar experience, not about raising the money, but being disallowed in 2019 from running in my own riding, only it was based on my views and values, and some things I'd written, a book I'd written. And at that point in time, I went, wow. And people who had been backing me were just like, and I was talking about, we are having our freedom stripped from us. You know, that was kind of where I was coming from as a platform. And the people who were, following me and certainly would have been voting for me were just, absolutely shocked that the Conservative Party disallowed me. So I expect that that happened for you as well, that the people who were, investing that kind of money, and all of a sudden their candidate can't run. Wow. That's...
Well, that's right. And I think there was obviously an agenda to why those things were happening. And I think the thing that was profound for me was that when they were presented with the truth and the actual evidence, the story then changed so that, okay, well, now we see the money. But the other requirement, the signatures that had been required for nominations across the country, suddenly was short and in a deficit, even though it had been previously verified. And so it was just like, well, whatever they could make up to rationalize or justify justify on the surface that I wasn't to proceed. Now, that was really interesting to me because, if you're doing something out of aspiration and desire, you'd be, heartbroken and just kind of disgusted that that had happened. For me, it wasn't that. It was more of an awareness of, we have a situation here where there's a wholesale unwillingness to see, to justify the, live within the rules or justify their position within the existence of their own rule structure. There was a kind of a crookedness that was just simply wicked. And so it was unassailable by logic or reason or even their own rules for review or a committee looking at the bigger picture and saying it's in the best interest of the nation to have this run. We need to look at this. And there was none of that. So for me, that kind of became a, well, that was an opportunity for the party to be reformed. It had a voice that had the potential to come into it and to work within it and to shape it and kind of re-steer it. Many people across the country called me that had kind of been in similar positions at a national or a provincial level of leadership said, you've got to sue the party. You've got to sue the party. It wasn't where my heart posture was. And I left that transaction with the sense of the party having been weighed and measured and found wanting. And I think that that's probably the best place to leave that. And so that hasn't changed my perspective in terms of what Canada needs. It's just that the Conservative Party isn't a part of the solution that's actually going to return us to the values or the root system that has built this nation.
It's exactly right. Like what the disillusionment, and I was a non-politician. There was no way, that was not something that was in my script of life to ever do. It was something I felt compelled to do, very much like you did. One thing I'm just thinking, maybe if you could help our American friends who watch, just give them a quick liberal versus conservative and kind of a little bit of a, here's what the Conservative Party is supposed to be doing and traditionally has held a place that was very important in maintaining some kind of balance in this country. Can you do that just quickly and then we'll move on maybe to what's happened in your next steps?
I'm clearly not American, so I always am quite timid about trying to define that. But I think very simply, The Canadian Conservative Party is akin to the Republican Party, and the Liberals and the NDP would fall within the tent pegs, if you will, of the Democrats in the U.S. And I think what's going on is that while there is an internal battle going on with the U.S. and U.S. Republican parties, and there's this MAGA movement that is, in my view anyway, it looks as if it's reshaping it and kicking out the rhinos, the Republicans in name only, within the Conservative Party in Canada, by analogy, the rhinos are actually running the party. And, you know, Canadians, the Canadian history of the Conservative Party is one, and this is part of what I discuss a little bit in my book, is that history, because Canada is still 53.3% Christian, or identifies itself as such. So whenever the Conservative Party was formed 20 years ago under the leadership of Stephen Harper, many of those people came into the party as what we call social conservatives or the Christian right. And the party in its development has basically celebrated and elevated the fiscal conservative mandate, which is all of the financial monetary policy type issues, but left silent the social conservative issues, like the issues to do with life or abortion or gender transition. And it's been an awkward place for this big majority of people that are within the party that are social conservatives or the Christian right. So there's a war raging inside of the party that has many facets to it, including the disconnection of the grassroots of the party with what the gray suits within the party are actually doing. And so that's kind of, I'm not sure exactly what's going on inside the U.S. Republican Party, but there seems to be a similar kind of conflict, I guess, going on with these values. And so, you know, as we get into this conversation, and the discussion isn't about political philosophy, it's actually about values. It's actually about good and evil. And we're ultimately in a spiritual battle. And to have the conversation any other way, I think misrepresents the depth and the breadth of the actual problems and challenges that we're facing as a people.
Yes, and see, that's very near and dear to my heart. So you mentioned Stephen Harper, and you have a quote, and I'm going to read it for our audience. It's on page 41 of your book. So here is Grant's book. You're going to see this again. Battle for the Soul of Canada, Firing the Forge. And I'm just going to read this quote from Stephen Harper because I think it speaks directly to what you're saying. Before leaving office, Prime Minister Stephen Harper recognized the emergence of moral principles that clash with so many faiths in Canada. He said conservatives need to reassess our understanding of the modern left. It has moved beyond socialistic morality or even moral relativism to something much darker. It has become a moral nihilism, the rejection of any tradition or convention of morality, a post-Marxism with deep resentments, even hatreds of the norms of a free and democratic Western civilization. Moral nihilism. My goodness, this was a while ago that Stephen Harper, Prime Minister Stephen Harper, spoke those words. Want to speak to that, moral nihilism? I think that's really kind of the root of what we're talking about here, of views and values.
Mm-hmm. Well, it absolutely is. And I think the comment that I go on to make is that Stephen Harper identified the assault on those traditional values that we have in Canada in terms of faith and family and freedom and prosperity and the ability to work hard and change your life and change the trajectory of your life and your family's wealth position or prosperity or education. And that's part of what the Canadian dream is and why people come from all over the world. The darkness that he's referring to, that moral nihilism, is the simplest way for me to describe that is that there's a moral vacuum that expunges or repels those moral values that maintain a minimum code of behavior in terms of self-respect, dignity, the value of life, the value of the individual as opposed to the collective. There's the stripping away of the identity of people. We believe that men and women are created in God's image. We believe that that is their identity. And we believe that they have value intrinsically. And that is the beginning of our inalienable rights, because they're God-given. And so a moral nihilism strips that out of the social contract and makes us just a biological widget. And so it's an interesting one, because this discussion, because saying that Canada was shifting towards a dark moral nihilism is a different thing than saying that what is happening is evil. And I go on, and I think I make the point and say, I don't think Stephen Harper had the courage to actually call moral nihilism evil, because if you bring in darkness, that's stripping away light, that the best, the easiest, and the most simple way to define that is evil. And what we're seeing now is evil, because we're seeing the elevation of an agenda to promote the normalization of pedophilia. And, in so many ways, there's nothing more repulsive and an offense to a family value, or what a parents would approve happening to their children. And that's happening on a governmental level with some of the policies that are being invoked. So this moral nihilism is really the beginning point in terms of defining this as I said, a spiritual discussion, a discussion about good and evil. And it requires the big sleeping majority of conservative Canadians that hold a faith, whether it's Christian, firstly Christian, or Sikh, or Muslim, or Jewish, to recognize that we now can no longer allow these benchmarks to be gone past, because we're going to end up in a place that's very, very comfortable to live in. And that then crashes into this discussion as well about our politics, because we've got a conservative policy platform, marketing platform, articulated by Mr. Poilievre, who is simply saying, you will have more money in your pocket if you vote for the Conservative Party of Canada, and therefore you will be more free. And so I don't think that is a credible discussion, because more money does not return your granddaughter's breast to her because she's decided to cut them off. And sometimes we don't like talking about things like this that are so visceral, but that is the reality. These are lives of loved ones that is particularly with youth are being damaged irreversibly. And so many people in Canada miss the discussion about the value of life in relation to abortion or euthanasia. And now we're here and we need to speak up, because it's now pulling down the framework of the nation. And so this is our discussion. It's spiritual, it's political, it's governmental, and it will touch home and hearth all across the nation.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're talking about different faiths needing to recognize what's happening with the evil. And I mean, we're seeing that happen. I'm very, very much involved in the planning now of the 1 million March for Children coming up September 20th. And that is an exciting event. I think it's going to be a pivotal event in Canada. I know the world is also watching, much like they did with the truckers' convoy. There are people from all over Canada coming together, and small towns, big city centers, all meeting at city halls, town halls, on the 20th at 9 a.m., taking their children out of school. All faith. It's not a religious event. It's not a political event. It is a parental rights event. And people, and I've been writing about this for a lot of years, actually, my latest book, and you're going to hear about this later, just arrived yesterday. I've got a copy of it right here. This makes me very happy. Just timely. It's called The Ultimate Deception, The Truth of Gender-Affirming Care. Because this has been my lane, and to see parents arising all over Canada to stand together. Doesn't matter your faith. Doesn't matter if you have no faith. It matters for neighbors and friends and maybe even people that don't like each other, right? Come together because they're seeing what is transpiring in our education system. And it's not just the education system, because the government, of course, is behind the education system, and we are in a mess. What I thought was happening in 2019, and, you know, I could see, you know, you see through glass darkly. I knew in my spirit that there were things that were just so evil, but I don't think any of us could have really anticipated where we would be in 2023 with this whole LGBTQ activist agenda. Now, I'm not talking about the individuals within the LGBT. I'm talking about an activist agenda to actually change the minds, the brains of our children. And you said it, to actually desensitize them to the whole issue of pedophilia and make them so vulnerable, so vulnerable. This has been going on for 70 years. This isn't something that just hit us right out of the blue. I mean, I talk about that in Closing the Floodgates, and that's what the why the Conservative Party didn't want me to be a member of their party, because I wasn't going to back down from truth, which was all research-based. But the reality is that now, what I was saying in 2017, I was yelling in the back of my book in, you know, capital letters, parents unite, parents stand firm, parents stand together. And now we're seeing it. I think we're on the verge of something that is really, really, really exciting, also very challenging. And we're seeing some flip-flop with the premiers in Canada regarding the gender curriculum and the pronouns, all that stuff. It's so diabolical. It's really about the annihilation of our children and the deconstruction of our families.
And it is. And it's a challenge for us, because Section 92 of our Constitution has education covered within a provincial remit. And yet this agenda is rolling out across the country. And it speaks to the bigger and broader issues within our nation in terms of the transfer payments and how the federal government runs their tax transfer system and the control of the money. And so this is why you see movements arising in Western Canada that would be happy enough just to see a partitioning of the West at the Winnipeg border or the Manitoba border. And this belies bigger issues. It's this issue of the transgender, this normalization of the sexualization of our children is one shield face in terms of what's going on in the country, because we have Justin Trudeau actually saying Canada will be the post nation, will be a post nation state, that COVID has provided Canada an opportunity for a reset. And the daunting thing is that, well, first of all, he's saying these things and they never have to be explained or defined. We're just showing. And the bigger challenge for me is that, the Conservative Party that's there and supposed to be the loyal opposition in this discussion is not asking those questions. And so, you know, we've had soldiers go off to war to defend the values that this nation's built on. And yet we have a prime minister telling us that Canada is going to be a first post nation state, or that was an opportunity for a reset. Well, what does that mean? And it's as big an omission not to ask those questions as it is to be doing it to the country. And I mean, as a lawyer, I look and I say, those mandates from a minority government are all actually ultra vires, which means outside of the powers of the government. And that moves us into real discussions about the legitimacy of that authority and the rules that are being invoked, because it's a total contravention of what we understand our nation to be about. So this is a bristling discussion. It's not just the normalization of pedophilia or the sexualization of our children. And so there's a framework here that many Canadians should be very, very concerned about, because when you talk about what it means to be a post-nation state, it means that our accountability moves from our elected officials to someone else out there that is simply a bureaucrat within a, and in this case, a UN structure. And there's tons of evidence that this is exactly what is happening. And, you know, this is where I'm screaming from the rooftops, Canadians, you need to wake up. This isn't about some issue in particular. That's just one of the deconstruction sites. At some point, you will wake up and there will be decisions being made in places that you don't understand why those decisions are happening and where they're coming from. And the biggest one is the declaration of the next pandemic and the fact that their health decisions will not be being made strategically from provincial health authorities. Now, Canada's had a big enough problem the last time. Imagine now the arbitrariness of that because of some international treaty. So we need to engage because we're going to lose our sovereignty.
Yes. Well, and Grant, just something else that you were saying, the bigger picture, you know, this whole medical, I can't even get my head around all of that, and that people are still so oblivious to what actually happened during COVID. But there's another thing here, too, that, you know, just is happening in our very rural area is regarding property rights, land rights, right? That what you have, you know, as Klaus Schwab said, you will own nothing and you will be happy. And what people don't understand, you know, kind of just regular, ordinary Joes, and I consider myself one of those. I'm a farm girl, and we still live on the farm. But the reality is our land that we think that like we've sweat for, right? That we have worked, that we have, well, it's five generations have worked on this farm. And that land is up for grabs according to our government and what's happening within the powers that be. And it's very frightening. It's very frightening. And I don't think people just don't even seem to be aware of these things.
Yeah, and this is emanating from UN Agenda 2030. This is part of this agenda to dispossess people from land and from their ability to self-sustain on the land. And it's a grave, grave issue. One of the pieces in the book that I reveal is a working group of 52 people in British Columbia that are constructed from municipal, provincial, federal government offices and some elected officials that are actually working on the mechanisms to deconstruct the value framework and the legal framework that sustains our understanding of what Canada is around particular issues like land and water rights and waterways and the right to access water. And so even things like prosperity and what we understand wealth to be, and wealth is, you know, in there, I'm always disgusted with it because it actually completely erodes what we understand in our nation to be building, which is wealth that we can pass and bless our offspring or our family members or people that we love or whatever. But that's wealth is being defined now as commonly held interests, right? And so this is part of the discussion. I go into that a little bit in the book. But the indicators that we need to be aware of is that there are these groundswell changes. And if you just keep drifting along kind of in some kind of a comatose, slumbering walk and just keep voting in a way that is going to perpetuate the status quo of the liberal and the conservative, you're missing the fact that there's a wholesale unraveling of the nation going on while you're sleeping. And this is such an important discussion. And this is why I wrote the book. The book is actually quite provocative because it assaults in so many ways those things that aren't being discussed by the Conservative Party that I think they have a sacred duty to discuss with the nation. And so in that vacuum, in the absence of that responsibility, that fiduciary responsibility, that conversation starting. And I think we're going to see new expressions of political response where we're having those real conversations on behalf of the nation so that we can have a legacy for our grandchildren. So we can have one people, one blood, one nation together as a political vision for our future, and not all of this polarizing stratification that creates so much trouble in the country.
Well, yes, and you know, when you're talking about, for instance, the 52 people in BC, I didn't know anything about that group, and I doubt that very many Canadians are aware of that group, and yet here they are primed to make decisions on behalf of citizens of Canada, and no one's exposing this. No one is exposing this. How did you find out about them?
Well, these people, I'll come to that in a sec. These people are really, they're actually working through and drafting legislation that as they say, I think if I remember correctly from my notes on it, they're saying that we have a blind spot in Canada that needs to be removed. The blind spot is the value framework that actually has built the nation. And they're saying that that's a blind spot that's in the way of the implementation of this 2030 agenda. So therefore they need to eradicate the blind spot in order to enlighten us to forfeit these rights and actually deconstruct what was and bring in what is to be. And I found this because the government, there's a lady that I know that was on one of these committees. And actually, thank you. And actually was talking to me one day and she mentioned some things. It's like maybe like talking about a tree and said, here's a leaf. And I recognized she's talking about a tree. There is a, you know, a wicked tree that she's talking about that this leaf has come. And it was kind of a conversation like that. And as I started to talk to her the two or three times that we discussed things together, I realized more and more that there actually was this tree. And I said, you know, do you realize that if this was actually what you're telling me about what's going on in this meeting, and by the way, this committee is constructed and paid for from Liberal government money that's being sent out to fund this not-for-profit that's doing this work. So it's like a shadow committee of the actual sitting government, but it's not accountable to parliamentarians. So I said to her, I said, you know, do you realize that what you're actually doing is deconstructing the country, and that at some point in the future, when someone looks back at what's going on, that agenda to undermine and destabilize the nation is actually treasonous? And she, she kind of freaked out at this concept. And so then, you know, I asked her then for a copy of her working notes on this discussion. She gave me pages and pages of what was being worked on at, you know, circa, say, February 20, March 20, June 2020, that kind of window. And so I was able to go through these and then I wrote a thought paper really just to capture how sinister this deconstruction was and the wordplay that was being used that made things sound great, but actually made it like barbed wire in terms of what we actually want as a people. And so that I have put that into the back of the book as Appendix A. And as a reflection, now, interestingly, that document ended up in several places within the Conservative Party, that some individuals that were within the Conservative Party read it. And also the RCMP got a hold of it. And I ended up having some discussions with them. And that was very interesting because at the point that we had that discussion, my feeling was that there were so many other bigger issues with foreign interference. They almost saw it as a philosophical political discussion, not something that was insidiously eroding the framework of the nation. And in some ways, I understand the RCMP's perspective, because they're not there to be philosophers. They're there to enforce the law. The politicians that saw it were alarmed because they saw the leaves of the trees blowing around out there, but didn't realize that there was actually, you know, a full tree that was producing this kind of stuff. But at that point, there wasn't the will or the desire or the political impetus to actually engage it and challenge it. So And interestingly, I actually wrote to Pierre Poilievre at the time because I thought, oh, he's the shadow finance minister. He's got to be someone who's interested in this kind of a deconstruction going on to the heart of Canada. And his answer, I have actually put in the book as well. And it's underwhelming, let's put it that way. So this stuff is real. It's real across, you know, I kind of talk about shield faces, where what is the Canada we know and love is kind of got its shield up and defending itself to this assault upon our identity and upon our borders, upon our sovereignty, and upon the heart and soul of what this nation's about. And so we need to think about it. And that this book is a simple revelation of what is being done, and more so what's not being done by whom we think is defending our interests. And it requires a rethink and a pushing out of the ruts we've allowed ourselves to be in politically.
I think this book's a real firestorm. I mean, when I read it, I was just every page almost, I'm going, oh, thank you, God. Thank you, God. Because so much of it resonated with me. And I mean, and then I learned a lot in it as well. You're a really wonderful writer. It's not that difficult of a read. And I think it needs to be in every home in Canada, quite honestly, because we need, as Canadians, to know what we're up against. And we need someone that is willing to really speak the truth out there in a political, you know, not in a, well, in a political sense. I mean, you're reaching out, you know, this is getting into the Conservative Party hands, you're exposing something, but underwhelming is not the response that I, well, that any of us would want to see. It should have been addressed immediately. And, you know, these people need to be brought to account. The Liberal Party needs to be brought to account. And you were talking about Canadian identity. Well, our Prime Minister doesn't believe we have an identity, you know? And Canadians are pretty sick of that. I mean, we are, I see across the board, just grassroots Canadians. We are literally up to here with having stuff shoved down our throat, whether it is the LGBTQ activism, whether it is removing of property rights, all of these things that are all rising to the surface. But you said it a little bit earlier, this whole agenda to deconstruct, but also it is the, I guess I would call it the agenda to replace good with evil. I mean, it's not that Canadians are perfect. We're not talking about that. But we're talking about a country based on Judeo-Christian faith and perspectives and morality. You know, I was listening to Jordan Peterson, one of my favorite people to listen to. And the other day he said, you know, we can get rid of all of the laws. We can get rid of police officers anytime we want to. All we have to do is follow the Ten Commandments. Everybody agreed to follow the Ten Commandments, we'll be okay. Well, you know that people don't agree to do that. That's why we have, you know, the whole policing, because there's lawlessness. Well, now lawlessness is not just something out there somewhere. Lawlessness is happening in our political spheres. It's the political spheres that are bringing more lawlessness into Canada. And that is irritating, to say the least.
Yeah, it's incomprehensible. And I think that I think people, I mean, we're, you know, I guess I look at it, I think we all have light within us to shine, to bring goodness, to bring help, to advance the interests of our society, our fellow men, our family. And when I look at what our nation has done, I mean, we grew up in a country where we believed that it was wrong to cross the line between the secular and the sacred. And so as Canadians, whatever your ilk or color and in terms of faith, we made it a value that we wanted to respect as Canadians that said you don't bring the sacred into secular discussions. you don't bring your religious views per se strictly into value discussions that impact that are being discussed or engaged in the public square, because this is a secular society. Even though, you know, right now, I think it's what, 70% of the nation adheres to some kind of a religious faith, be it Christian, Jewish, Islam, Sikh, Buddhist, whatever. And so we all have some kind of transcendental understanding of good and evil. Yet our entire structure has said you can't talk about that. But while we've been respecting the rules about the secular and the sacred, our nation has actually been discipled by secularism that is pulling us down this moral toilet. And it's time that wall between the secular and the sacred actually gets kicked down. It's not a value that's going to sustain anything that we want to build. And we need to start to talk about what is good and evil, what is right, what is wrong. And I think that's Jordan Peterson's point, is that if you allow this vacuum to happen, it'll be what Thomas Hobbes said, life will be nasty, brutish, and short. And we won't want that kind of society. So, you know, this edifice that this nation was built on, and all the strongest economic nations that people aspire to live in, America and Canada and the UK and Australia and New Zealand, have been built on this Judeo-Christian civic moral order. And we even if you're a, you know, an atheist, one needs to think carefully about departing from that moral order. And so this is really the discussion. And I think now the problem is the malaise in Canada is that we're just floating along in the ruts of our political pathways, but not recognizing that this ship called the CPC, Conservative Party of Canada, is not going in any direction that is going to steer us towards the values that we love. They're actually going left slightly slower than the Liberals. And so not much at all. You know, and if I read it correctly yesterday in the National Post, I mean, the Conservative Party had their convention. They had all these discussions. People came from all over the country to discuss these policy issues and debated them hotly. And the bottom line from Mr. Poilievre was that he wasn't guaranteeing that any of those policy discussions would become a part of the political platform in the next election.
Well, and this is where you see people get so excited. I used to. Because I used to see those and think, oh, good, they're finally listening and we'll see something change. Nothing changed, because even though it was a pseudo kind of thing, you know, who gets to put their policies forward and which policies that are then accepted. And let's face it, behind all of these, and I think career politicians, and I'm not trying to take individuals down, I'm just saying that, you know, they're under tremendous pressure to conform under the UN guidelines, everything that is non-national, honestly. And so I get that, but we elected them to stand up for us. And that's where the rubber meets the road. And if they cannot stand up for the views and values of Canadians, and some people would say, well, those are my views and values. Well, okay, the views and values that are being adopted in the public square are the views and values of LGBTQ activists. That's actually the new religion, LGBTQ. I said a few months ago, actually before Tucker Carlson said it. And I also said that if you don't sacrifice on this altar, then you are canceled, you're a bigot, you're all those things. But the other part of all this is that we have a whole lot of other things happening spiritually. Satanism is on the rise. When you talk about inversion, we're talking about inversion of truth or good. I'll call it good over evil. It's now evil over good, even down to the very, very core things in the spirit realm. And I think that's something most Canadians and some watching today will kind of go, well, what are you talking about? But even if you don't understand that, at a visceral level, I think people feel it. It's happening. Evil is invading Canada. Evil has invaded. And the only way to push back the darkness is by light. We must tell truth in the public square. If we do not tell the truth, no matter what the cost, Canada will not be saved from a very evil agenda of annihilation.
Right. And so this is the discussion for me where I'm saying, first of all, we need to recognize that we have to have light. We need to remove the barriers, that secular, sacred, just, you know, paradigm, let it shine, and then find each other around lampstands. And it's getting out of the traditional pathways that Canada has politically been in. We need to build lampstands around what we, and this is what's happening in this million person march, because we have the Muslims in Canada reaching out to the Christian church and saying, where are you? We know you have these values, but you're sleeping. And so we're finding each other around these new lampstands. Those lampstands, in my view, are going to become a movement that is going to reshape Canada. And this is the grassroots conservatism. This is where this understanding of the spiritual light becomes a political discussion, because it's shaping a movement that's going to shape new parties in Canada that are actually going to say, you know what, if this country can be screwed up this badly by a minority government of the Liberals, we can actually build a new party that takes a position that shapes policy productively and takes us in the direction that we want to go. And that's not getting into a discussion about any other global issues that are going on that could also buffet our country, in the shape of the fiat currency erosions and the shape of this new gold standard and what that means when the US dollar becomes not the petrodollar anymore, and what that means for Canada. And we may have bigger problems than just the, you know, the massaging nuances of our political kind of our political contextual conversations. And so I happen to believe personally that we have a national anthem that says, God keep our land glorious and free. And many Christians in this country will pray for their finances or their spouses or for health or for, you know, whatever. And yet in that anthem, that is a prayer. And I think my declaration for the nation today is that God is not an indifferent bystander to the interests of Canada. The Canada has been set in place for a purpose. There's a mandate for this nation, and it's not going to be easily forfeited. And what it requires is people to stand up with their light, find lampstands, and build a movement that has the expression of the kind of nation that we wish to see built for our grandchildren. And this is the vision for a new Canada that is a withered grape inside the Conservative Party of Canada. And this is why it's such a hopeless, disgusting conversation that I see. I don't think that party can be reformed. And until it's not going to be reformed until there's actually conversations like that, either inside it or outside it. And so these conversations are starting here today, really, and in relation to what our country needs. So it's a pivotal hinge time for our nation, much more than the consensus out there thinks or believes.
Yes. And, you know, you were talking about our national anthem, and it just reminded me when I was in Calgary the last time I joined together with Muhammad Mora, and a Muslim man who was standing with others, Christians and Muslims, and you have been introduced to him now. And you know, at that event, he asked me to speak. And then at the end of the time we were together, and then it was there was a demonstration, you know, people coming together to demonstrate and to have their voices heard about the curriculum, education curriculum, that and what they saw happening to their children. But at the end of the time, they had someone come and sing O Canada. And, you know, we stood together, arms linked. And so I'm a Christian believer. He's Muslim. There were atheists in the crowd. That, you know, we're standing together and we can come together, you know, and sing, God keep our land. God keep our land glorious and free. And, you know, what our prime minister has attempted to do over the last, you know, years is to divide us all, you know, to divide us and pit us against each other. And he's done that recently, you know, in fact, when he was in Calgary talking about how the Muslims are simply listening to the American right-wing people. And I'm thinking, well, no, they've been talking to people like me and people like you and other people, and they are coming awake and alive, and we can join together and sing the national anthem and be proud to sing it and to be proud to be Canadians. And that was a really, that was a real pivotal moment for me in July. And I think, you know, as I look at what's transpiring now and the grassroots movement that has gained so much energy, that can put together that with your antidote, which is really a reinstatement of the views and values that we hold dear in this country. Really, that's the framework, the views and values that we hold dear. That is the most important thing that we are going to have to hold on to and move toward. We're just soon, you know, we have another 5 minutes or so, but why don't you finish off with some other thoughts, like anything you want to add to kind of your antidote, and then what are you doing in the future? What do you hope to accomplish with this book? With your life, those kind of things. That's a big statement.
Yeah. Well, I think right now what I'm doing is I'm having these conversations with Canadians that are so desperately hungry, because it's they're hearing articulated the things that I think that they're feeling and seeing and perceiving. And this is what much of the book tour is about. And I think that the conversation when I meet with people in Canada is very much, well, what do we do? There's no alternative. We have no alternative, because all of these political parties, one's the problem, the other one's a cul-de-sac that's basically facilitating the problem. And one of the things that I have actioned with a group of people in Western Canada is the beginning of a formation of a new federal party that will begin to articulate these values for all Canadians, but as a confrontation really to the erosion that we're seeing here, and as a steer, you know, let's call it the center right. I mean, I love the way the left defines things in our nation now. They go so far left, and anybody who would be center right and kind of truly conservative, fiscally or socially conservative or both, has suddenly become a right-wing extremist. And so I think with some of those little definitions and word plays need to be challenged. And I think that if we can get that established and positioned properly, we'll have very interesting discussions with Canadians, because I think there's a heart cry for truth. There's a heart cry for the justice that flows from that truth. And I think that that is the framework that we understand freedom to emanate from in our nation. And that's all been forgotten. Those are the sounds of our foundation stones. That's the vibrational sounds that they make in our nation. And that's what's brought generations of us to this country. And we need to return to those foundation stones. So that's what I'm doing at the moment, and we're working hard to do that.
It's exciting. It's very exciting to me, and I think it'll be very exciting to Canadians right across the board as we move forward. So, Grant, I just want to thank you personally. Thank you for what you've been doing behind the scenes, and now more upfront, and for challenging the Conservative Party. Their track record hasn't won them a lot of gold stars in the last few years, and it doesn't look like it will, even though Mr. Polyev certainly is a step up from maybe what we've had. I think because he's not willing to embrace the actual issues that you've talked about, which is the value framework of this country, that's going to be a demise problem for him.
Yeah, well, there's this general kind of unwillingness to engage the issues, but I think the most damning issue is this Bill C-4, is the conversion therapy bill. And I know that you're probably more familiar than that with me, but we now have a nation that has a criminal law in it put in place and validated by the Conservative Party of Canada unanimously. Okay, that's Mr. Polyev and Leslyn Lewis that voted that if a parent prays for or takes their child to a pastor or to a counselor or to any kind of help to help dissuade them from their gender transition agenda, they will attain a 5-year criminal penalty. And when I always say, when I look at this, I just think that's so abhorrent, because that is right into the root of our understanding of parental primacy, of authority for our kids, right? And our religious freedom. And the Conservatives have done that. And to think that you can sexually molest a child in Canada, and the sentencing these days is kind of 3 years or less for that, but you're getting 5 years as a parent for implementing your faith in action into a situation. If we believe that God can change situations and pray for people, we've now criminalized prayer in that situation, because we're bowing a knee to this LGBT agenda that you're articulating properly as an altar. And that's what's happened. And Christians aren't even tuning in and engaging it. People of faith aren't even tuning really in and engaging it. And that I'd like to put that down to the Liberals, but the Conservatives have empowered that. So we really need to rethink what we're doing.
That day, the vote day for Bill C-4, after all the work we did for about 3 years on a municipal and then the provincial and then federal level, and trying just to bring qualifiable, verifiable research and saying, this is not a good thing and what you're going to do is disastrous. Anyways, when the Conservatives voted unanimously, I just sat there, and I have to say, actually, I wrote my next newsletter that day. I should have waited another day, but I honestly felt so nauseated. I was just, because I think what you're saying, he just hit me so much that this is, it's struck at the very root of who we are as people and what we believe as a nation, what we believe biologically, and it's all set in place by a nefarious agenda. And yet here are our politicians choosing to vote yes, go for it. And so I think it was one of those things that, yeah, it was very, very difficult to take. But here we are now. It's a new day, and I believe there's hope. I hope rises every morning when I get up. I think, okay, God, it's a new day. What's going to happen?
Yeah, that's
and
right.
We have to be like that.
Yeah. Well, and I think, I mean, maybe a good point to finish this in relation to the book, Anne, is that quote that you read. The few pages later, I then go on and say that while we don't identify evil, we now have a prime minister that in 2006 called the people that actually articulate these values kind of the embarrassing and bombastic people that came from the Reform Party, that were the ones that hold the values that we're actually talking about, that are the guardian values in so many ways for the nation. And so if that doesn't dislodge you from understanding where the Conservative Party is not going to take us, I don't know what will. And so I hope that people do read it. My heart is for Canada and for its people, and to see us thrive and prosper and be fruitful. And we've got to get away from, you know, people who just want to be in power and be political, you know. And I guess when I look at this book, the last thing you would ever do if you aspired to be in power would be to write this book, because it's going to confront the entire system. And so I hope that this finds its way into the hearts of Canadians that are troubled and frustrated by what we're seeing, because we need a new expression of truth and freedom and justice in this nation.
Absolutely. And I hope the same thing. I hope it gets into the hands of the grassroots people in Canada. Yes. And so we're going to end, and there'll be more information for those watching on Grant's book, so you'll be able to order it, and that you'll be able to understand more of his heart for Canada. Thank you very much, Grant, for sharing. And we could talk for hours on Bill C-4, but we won't go there.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you for the work you're doing as well.
Thanks for joining us today and watching my interview with Grant Abraham. And I encourage you to check the show notes for information on how to get his book, and also my new book, The Ultimate Deception, which is about the dangers of gender-affirming care. You're going to want to read both of those. And for those of you who aren't readers, well, they're very short books, but they're packed full of information. So check the show notes, and we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Truth Talks with Dr. Rand. Thank you so much for joining us today. You can find Anne's books, blog, and sign up for the newsletter by going to restoringthemosaic.ca.